are now tuned into anything potable. The most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital. Like Antoine when he shimmied after the shots went through.
So Boston Celtics Podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan. And I am joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend himself, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jay King, ladies and gentlemen. And we are coming to you on Valentine's Day because I am in love with this Boston Celtics team. They have won 8 straight. Derek White is fitting in perfectly in his 2 games. They just looking like a pretty damn good squad. Jay, what did you think of Derek White in his debut? And what do you think about kind of the pair of wins the Celtics had this weekend against the Nuggets and the Hawks?
Before we get to that, we have to talk about the wild move you pulled off on the trade deadline to get out of our podcast. At what point did you know you were not going to be able to podcast after the trade deadline? And at what point did you realize, like, oh, man, like this probably isn't great that they've traded all these dudes and I'm not going to talk about it?
Well, the big issue that all – I think it was pretty much after the Derek White trade. I thought there was going to be a moment – where we could do like a quick little podcast. But then as soon as they did all the deals at the deadline, it pretty quickly became apparent that I wasn't going to be able to do a full podcast because I didn't expect them to do all of that. And I didn't anticipate you having to like probably write a full story. I thought it was just going to be a quick little thing. So that was poor planning on my part. I'm going to say, I did also plan to do a podcast. I just didn't communicate that I could only have like an hour to do it.
How did you let your phone die?
Because I was literally in class all day refreshing it. that's how it died.
So you were trying to keep up with the trade deadline. And so eagerly scrolling through Twitter that it just passed away.
Yeah, I mean, it was poor phone management on my part. It was poor podcast management on my part. I even someone asked for a reaction podcast, and I was like, yeah, buddy, you're going to get it later today. So I just completely didn't consider that you have another job in this thing. I thought you'd be directly able to accommodate my schedule without me telling you what that schedule was whatsoever.
I enjoyed the DM. Getting a DM from you, it cracked me up. All right, but back to the Celtics, back to Derek White, back to a team that has now won 8 straight games. For a while there, obviously, the Celtics were beating nobody, and teams they were playing were either bad or their best players weren't playing, or both. So the last 2 games, I think, have been very promising because not only did the Celtics beat the Nuggets – and then follow that up by beating the Hawks. But they didn't play particularly well throughout either game. Like, I thought the first half against the Nuggets, they were pretty bad, especially at the start of that game. And how many times this season have the Celtics played poorly and then just gritted one out? Not very often. they follow that up. And kind of a similar path in the Hawks game, where, again, rough start. Couldn't do anything offensively for the first half. And all of a sudden, third quarter comes, Jason Tatum's rolling. Everybody's rolling. Fourth quarter comes, they give up part of the lead. They go to their new closing lineup with Derek White in it, and the defense just clamps down. And I think you've seen over these first 2 games of the Derek White experience that the Celtics defense, when it's locked in, can be awesome. And not only that, but it can be awesome against really good offenses in Denver and in Atlanta. Like the fourth quarter stint for that new closing lineup just really locked down the Nuggets. And then Celtics come back a couple days later and do the same thing to the Hawks, even though, you know, it was 4-minute stint rather than 8-minute stint for that group in the Atlanta game. But the defense is really, really going to be a bear for teams to play against. Like an absolute bear.
And the thing that's interesting is just how well – it's not just that closing lineup, but, like, their other pieces, I guess if you say, what are Horford and Grant at this point, are, like, kind of defensive-minded. And so in that Nuggets game, first, Jokic is absolutely insane. Just to be able to pass at his size and, like, some of the things he was doing early in that game were impressive. And it's wild how bad the Nuggets are when he's not on the court. But the Celtics, for the majority of that game, were kind of matching. They didn't even put Rob Williams on Jokic till that final stretch. It was pretty much Al Horford and Grant Williams. And I don't think Rob Williams would probably have succeeded, probably would have gotten foul trouble if he had to body Jokic the entire time. But the kind of the versatility of the team where, like, they were able to basically just say put Grant or Horford on Jokic that entire time. I think Al did a better job than Grant did just because of size stuff. But then to pivot to that down the stretch to go with this new closing lineup, Robert Williams held his own. But it's just like even the Celtics role players are defensive minded. And no matter like who they're playing, it feels like Ime Udoka has the ability to kind of switch the lineup. He can go double bigs. Now he has a kind of a smaller option. There's just the Celtics defense at no point is going to suffer, which is not something you could say before the trade deadline when, you know, Dennis Schroeder was getting a lot of minutes.
Yeah, and I thought it was pretty telling when Brad Stevens came out after the trade deadline passed, after he made those moves, and said he thinks that this group defensively is more dynamic than any team that he ever coached. And that's saying something, because he had the number one ranked defense 1 year. He had the number four ranked defense another year. The Celtics, during the last 5 or 6 years of his career, were pretty consistently in the top seven, with the exception of last season. So Brad Stevens knows what great defense looks like. And what separates this group, especially now that they have White, is there's no weak link. There's no Kemba Walker. There's no Kyrie Irving. There's no Isaiah Thomas. And obviously that hurts the Celtics a lot offensively. And they're going to need to figure out how to manufacture points like in the playoffs when guys are locked in. And there will be challenges, I think, that they'll run into. But Marcus Smart and Derek White, I at least when Tice gets back, probably, and he moves into the eight-man rotation, or maybe Peyton Pritchard will keep playing minutes. But playoff-wise, I think Marcus Smart and Derek White are going to be the team's two smallest players. And we saw on that great play Robert Williams made against the Nuggets, where he made the incredible recovery for a block and then went and saved it. Derek White switched on to Nikola Jokic. You know, like that's a guard. I don't know whether you want to call him a point guard. He might have been playing point guard at the time. I don't know if he really has a position. But you can switch your guard onto Jokic, and then you can have Robert Williams with enough athleticism to recover and make a block at the rim when Jokic beats a double team to find a guy. He looked pretty open at the rim. And I think that type of versatility, that type of athleticism from Robert Williams, and the intelligence now that the Celtics have at every position is rare. And I think that that's obviously their identity. That's obviously what Brad Stevens has leaned into. And the first couple games of the Derek White experience, like, there's a different level of thinking the game from him than there was from Dennis Schroeder and Josh Richardson. He's just, the intellect is higher. He processes things more quickly. And you can already see how that should help the Celtics.
Yeah, especially defensively. It feels like the transition was pretty seamless in just a guy who knows what he's doing. It kind of fits into their switch everything approach. And I thought the Celtics did a really good job of still switching everything. And even especially in that Jokic game, and it should be called the Jokic game, not the Nuggets game, because other than Aaron Gordon, the rest of the team is hot garbage. How bad is Austin Rivers?
No respect for Bones Highland?
Bones is a fast dude, but Bones is also, I think, had a lot of turnovers and didn't do much on the defense. But it felt like they were targeting Bones pretty much every single time down the court to start that game.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you got to target bone.
But the point is that, like, they are pretty, they're just very good at switching. And then even if there's a mismatch, the guy, the wing guy, like fronting, fighting, and then getting back to getting the right guy onto Jokic. I mean, there's a couple times a game where I think they'll get lost in there, but it just feels like they're communicating at a pretty high level. And let's use the cliche of moving on a string together, where they're really like everyone's kind of knowing what the other person's going to do. And it's kind of, I guess, with Derek White has played with the Celtics, but that's only in that like team select, whatever, USA select team. So you don't like expect them to have that much experience. I guess he's also played for Ime Udoka, but I've just been impressed with that, his ability to kind of do that on defense. And then on the offensive end, it just seems like his movement, his cutting, his passing ability. He had like a nice little moment with Tatum in the first game, and kind of some two-man game. He just seems like he's moving the ball well, and we'll see if the shooting lasts. He was able to knock down a couple threes in each of these past two games, but I think just as a guy,
he's got a quick release, man.
There was very quick release.
He lets him fly too.
He 2 for 10 against the Hawks was maybe closer than his 3 for 7 against the Nuggets. But just the ball movement, just the quick movement in general, there were some times where the Celtics just had very good offensive possessions, like drive, kick, drive, kick, drive, kick. And it's just such a stark difference than the world of Dennis Schroeder. I'm trying not to crap on Dennis, but like he was such a ball stopper.
What was your reaction when you heard that the Celtics had moved Dennis Schroeder?
Oh my God. I was thrilled to get rid of Dennis and Ennis and to get back Tice. It was like the successive tweets from Shams was phenomenal. It was I was giddy. I was just sitting in my constitutional law class giddy, but couldn't do anything. But it was fantastic. It was, man, what a wonderful end of deadline that was.
And it was right before the deadline too. So you could have been sitting there in whatever class, constitutional law, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, like you're kind of preparing for life with Schroeder.
I was ready to pivot to become a pro Dennis guy, be like, well, is he, you know what, he's gonna have his moments in the playoffs, like maybe he'll score 15 points in the second half. I was ready to kind of resign myself to being a guy who had to root for Dennis, and thank God I don't.
I've been impressed too by how quickly White has fit in. It was pretty crazy that he played the last 17 minutes and 29 seconds of his debut with the Celtics. Like Ime Udoka just was so excited to have him out there, so excited to use his new shiny closing lineup, that it was just like, you know what, fuck substitution. Forget that, we're leaving this dude in there, we're gonna show off our new closing lineup. And they did. They closed that game on a 22-14 run. They closed the Hawks game by allowing Atlanta to score just 4 points over the final 3:43. And two of those came after White very narrowly missed drawing a charge on Trae Young. And the other 2 points were like a totally meaningless alley-oop in the final minute. So that closing lineup has been really, really, really great so far in obviously limited minutes. But just the fit, like there's no awkwardness with White because he can do a little bit of everything. Like he can sit in the corner and spot up, and he's got a quick release and he's willing to shoot. He can cut if he's off ball. They've used him as a screen and roll guy against smaller guards. I'm thinking about Facu Campazzo, and he can make the move in the short roll. He can initiate offense if you need him. Like he can just, whatever you need him to do, he's capable of doing that.
The thing that's pretty impressive.
It allows him to be a pretty easy fit.
Yeah, I think Brad might have said this, or maybe it was Ime, but like with that closing lineup is like any four of the smaller guys can like kind of use a ball screen and like create off of it. And Jalen's probably the worst at it, but I think no one really mind having the Jalen and the ball in Jalen's hands. Although he has been playing in a bit of a funk lately, he probably can use the All-Star break. But just having all four of those guys be, I don't think they're excellent playmakers, although I think Marcus Smart has his moments, but all of them just are capable of making a play, making the right pass, and then just having the like Time Lord be there with vertical spacing as just kind of an outlet. And if anyone kind of leaves his body, I think it just makes their offense, raises their offensive potential. Obviously, I think they're still going to struggle. I think there's still moments where they get a little bit ISO heavy, but just like it, I think it's just having all four of those guys be able to kind of create, I think will lead to good things for the Celtics.
Yeah, and I think there's still obvious shooting issues.
Yeah, that was the funniest thing is that they made all these trades at the deadline and just didn't get any better in terms of shooting. Like they completely overhauled the roster and just maybe if you go by percentages got worse as a shooting team.
Yeah, although White is capable and White will let them fly. I think he was averaging 8 three-point attempts per 36 minutes ish in San Antonio. So he's going to get him up. And so teams, he's sort of Marcus Smartish in the way that like he's not a great shooter, but he can make them and he's willing to shoot them. So teams are going to have to guard him there.
Will they guard him more than they guard Grant Williams? Because Grant Williams has proven he can shoot it, but teams still don't guard him.
They're starting to guard Grant a little bit. You've seen some closeout success, like him driving closeouts. He had one move against Atlanta where he finished at the rim over, was it Okongwu?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, damn, that wasn't really.
No, that was in your back. Yeah, because no one's closed out against Grant before, so he hasn't had like an opportunity to show off any of his driving moves.
Yeah, so I feel like he's driving closeouts a little bit more now, and it's because people are actually closing out to him. And then the other piece, and I think this is really important, is, you know, we've seen the Celtics earlier this season be very low IQ in the highest moments. You know, like the most important moments, fourth quarter, they've done something stupid. They've settled for an ISO shot. They've done whatever. And I think they've gotten much better there. But I think the ability to play White in the closing lineup. And like Ime said, there's kind of nowhere to hide a bad defender. And we saw it in the Denver game. They were using White as a screen and roller in that game because they wanted to get Campazzo in the actions. And they wanted to force him to be, you know, either switched onto Jason Tatum or in the action against Jason Tatum. And if you try to do that with Dennis, something like that often deteriorates into Dennis going one-on-one.
Dennis pounding the ball into the ground until there's nothing left.
Or if you do it with Josh Richardson, like he would make fine decisions. But I do think Derek White just processes everything better. And there's a gap between the dynamic he brings versus what Richardson was able to do, especially in those closing moments. And so you can feel comfortable putting that weakest defender, whoever it is, whether he's guarding Marcus Smart, whether he's guarding White, whether he's guarding, for whatever reason, Jaylen Brown, like you can always put that weakest defender into an action and feel comfortable that the guy on the other side of it that Tatum's going to hit once they double-team Tatum or whatever is going to make a good read. And that's something that the Celtics haven't been able to rely on this season. And I think that is going to be crucial for them.
Yeah, because teams are going
to
double.
Be able to execute down the stretch.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. It's a novel concept.
Because teams are going to double Tatum. And so if you just have faith in everyone else, like playing 4-on-3 and making the right decision and making the right read, it just makes it like maybe they show
and
a little
Tatum's
bit
really making the right reads lately.
Yeah. But maybe
he's getting off the ball quick, too.
And it maybe gives like teams pause before they like show as much to Jason Tatum as they have before. Like some The Hornets, I think the Raptors really just like, they give so much attention to Jason Tatum, where it's just like, oh yeah, of course he's not going to be able to do anything because there's like so many guys there. But I think just having four guys around Tatum who are pretty good passers just makes that kind of defensive style a little bit harder. I think the question now is the Celtics of 1-8 straight. They are now in sixth place in the East, only two games back of the Sixers, 2.5 games back of the Cavs and Bucks. Like, everything is very tight at the top of the Eastern Conference. The question is, like, does this trade change your expectations for the team moving forward? Like, obviously, they've played themselves where they're clearly a pretty talented team in the Eastern Conference, but Eastern Conference is pretty talented, at least 1-8. I have no idea what to think of Brooklyn, who's lost 11 in a row, but, like, what's the expectation for the Celtics for the rest of this year?
I mean, I still think they are behind the top teams. Like, to me, it's Milwaukee, because I've seen Milwaukee do it.
And they have Giannis,
Basically this cast, and they have Giannis. And, you know, the Nets is just weird because Kyrie's going to miss half the games. Now they don't have a second, like, leading man behind Kevin Durant because Ben Simmons isn't that. Although he will certainly help their defense, he'll get the ball moving. Like, he's going to help them for sure. But I want to see that first before I'm willing to, like, crown that group. Because right now, at least when they're playing home games, it's going to be Kevin Durant and some question marks. And then I like Philly to me is on another level from Boston, because I think James Harden was just sandbagging it in Brooklyn, and all of a sudden,
he's gonna be awesome again. Renaissance, where, like, finally he shows up in shape with doing push-ups before the game.
So the Celtics, they're definitely better, significantly better than they were before the trade deadline. But I mean, how many teams would they be favored against in a playoff series? There aren't many. Cleveland, they'd be favored against.
They might be favored against the Bulls, depending on the kind of health of their team. Like, Zach LaVine's having weird specialist stuff this year. I think if they're hampered at all, you might favor the Celtics.
Agreed. And then there are some stuff, like, you can scheme against Vucevic and try to get him involved, and maybe that team's not as good in the playoffs as they have been in the regular season. Toronto, I think the Celtics would be favored, although Toronto's tough. But the East is going to be hell, man. Like,
it's going to be, like, awesome. The East playoffs are going to be, like, every single matchup 1-8 is going to be a damn good series. Like, no one wants to play the Raptors.
It's going to matter so much. Because if they're all those teams are lumped together, you could get, and if you get stuck in the same side of the bracket as Milwaukee, Philly, and Brooklyn, you're going to be like, damn.
There's no good side of the bracket, though. Like, I guess if you had, like, maneuver a Cavs Bulls
sixth right now. So the Celtics are in sixth right now. That would mean a first round matchup against Cleveland, right? That would mean a second round matchup if the seeds were right now versus Chicago or Toronto. Like, that'd be a good side of the matchup of the bracket. Like, that'd be the best side of the bracket, honestly. The Celtics should just pray for, like,
but they can't do anything because there's, like, we have no idea how the seeds are going to end up just because it's so tight. Even the top seven, like, the Raptors are only five games back of the first place. Like, you really could see, like, I don't think the Raptors or Celtics are going to get to, like, the top two, but I really could see the top, and who knows what happens in that. Anything could happen in the top eight, which is pretty wild. I think the Celtics have officially entered the make some noise category, like, especially if they're not favored. I think they're just, like, a team you do not want to play in the playoffs. Like, you do not, especially.
They're going to give people a tough series no matter what.
They have, like, the league's best defense right now. It's just, like, not a team you want to play in the playoffs. And, oh, yeah, they have one of the better individual scorers in the league, a guy who's put up 50 points in the playoffs. Like, that tends to matter more in playoff series where it's just, like, the individual talent rises to the top. I think the Celtics are officially in some make some noise category. I wouldn't be surprised with a first round series win. Who knows? Maybe it'll be like the Hawks last year. Maybe they'll just get lucky and face the 76ers in the second round. And we all know Joel Embiid has never been to an Eastern Conference final. So who knows what's going to happen with the Celtics. It's going to be interesting to see if they can keep this winning streak going. They're playing those 76ers without James Harden because he is needs a couple weeks to get back into shape and will be out till the All-Star break. But there's new life in the Celtics this season. Derek White has done a lot of great things for the team. And, you know, winning 8 straight, 9 in the last 10, what is it, 15 in the last 19 now. Turns out it's more fun when the Celtics are playing winning basketball. And so it's gonna be a fun final 2.5 months here before what's shaping up to be a very wild Eastern Conference playoffs.
It really is going to be a bloodbath. There are few weak links in that Eastern Conference. Like, the Cavs have been awesome this year. And they're like probably going to be pretty substantially the worst team in a playoff setting.
It's so funny how good they've been, but like they're immediately like, yeah, but I just don't buy the Cavs.
They just don't have enough scoring, right? At the end of the day, I think.
Yeah, I mean, but I would have said that they didn't have enough scoring to be 35-22, and here they are. So
that is very true. That is very true, and they just keep doing it.
They keep doing it. The Celtics will keep doing it. I know we're going to wrap it up here because the kid's a lover. He has a date. It's Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day to all the listeners out there. Jay, is love potable?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it is.